Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the Shuttle Pod. I am Kayla Iacovino, and I'm joined by...
My name is Jared Whitley.
And this is Brian Drew.
And today is Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. We have a lot of news to talk to you guys about today. A lot's been going on, both in terms of the new movie, Star Trek Beyond, coming out, and the new, as yet unnamed, CBS television series that we've been calling Star Trek All Access. So we're going to be sort of digesting all the latest news that's come out, talk about the latest events coming up. We're also going to recap a poll that we've been running on our website that we talked about a little bit last time. Jared started a Twitter poll asking whether fans are more excited for Star Trek Beyond or the upcoming television series. And we've also now placed a new poll asking that same question on our website, and we have some interesting results from that that we're going to share with you. And finally, I have a Trek anecdote to share with everyone today. So stay tuned for that. So guys, let's start by talking about a big event that happened recently, CinemaCon. So at CinemaCon, we had some big Star Trek news, or lack thereof. Basically, CinemaCon is this big event. It's a big, Comic-Con, basically, but for the film industry, the entertainment industry. And it's the place where you always expect the networks to put on a big show showcasing all of their biggest upcoming properties. So, Paramount was opening the convention on Monday night, and they had a two-hour-long presentation. So everyone was super excited to see something about Star Trek. It's been, what, something like 4 months, I think, is that right, since we've seen the last trailer?
Mid-December, I think. Yeah.
Mid-December is when we got the one and only trailer we've seen, and since then we've had one image come out. So we were hoping to see something really big. I don't know about you guys, but I was expecting a new trailer, actually.
Yeah, especially since the studio sent J.J. Abrams and Simon Pegg to the event. Now, granted, J.J. was there to accept some sort of honor that that CinemaCon was going to be giving him, but considering they bought them both out during the Paramount presentation, one would think that they would, show something Star Trek related.
Yeah, it seemed like a no-brainer, and even we were watching the Twitter feeds leading up to Paramount's showcase, as it were, and, that's what everyone was talking about. Can't wait to see some Star Trek stuff. Some people even got some quotes from Simon Pegg. He said that there is a new trailer and that it's quote unquote awesome. So people were like, okay, we're going to see this new trailer. We're going to see something, some clips. And then nothing happened.
Yeah.
So basically.
Yeah, I think we were stunned, I think.
I think everyone was.
Do we have any theories as to why this may be the case, as to why we're getting close to the finish line and so little promotional materials have been put out?
Well, now we know why.
Yeah.
So certainly at the time, I had my own theories about why we weren't seeing anything. Was it not ready? Was the trailer, maybe it wasn't actually cut. And they at first I thought maybe they were planning on having everything ready, and that's why they had Simon and JJ there, but it just didn't get... They didn't get it together in time. Some shortly after CinemaCon, some news came out that explains why we didn't see anything. Well, it explains why we didn't see a trailer at CinemaCon. That Paramount is going to be holding a fan event in Los Angeles next month, at which they will debut the trailer.
Right.
So
we don't know anything more than that.
Yeah, that's all we know. I still don't understand why they didn't show anything, to be honest.
I know, like a clip of something, even if it's just like some effects shots.
Right.
Or
right.
Show some stills.
Yeah, stills. Like here are some shots of our captain in his uniform. Here are some shots of our captain on his space motorcycle.
Yeah, anything.
So this sort of echoes our long-standing frustration with the lack of any kind of PR coming out for this film. And people were publishing this story about the fan event and the trailer being premiered there, saying, oh, of course, this is why we didn't see anything. But, I mean, to be honest, I don't know. That may be why we didn't see a trailer, but I'm still sort of disappointed that we didn't see anything else.
Yeah, me too. And I'm not sure why they didn't show at least a little something, because the initial reaction everyone had was, oh my god, the film must be terrible.
Right.
if they're like hiding it. I mean, the movie's coming out in 3 months, and yeah. You know, are they in such disarray that they can't even get themselves together to put together like even like a quick, you know, promo clip, 30 seconds long?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
So I think that was the initial reaction when Kayla and I were commiserating while it was going on, and we were both like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, like this looks really bad. Yeah. And that's what everyone else was saying, too. That seemed to be the talk of CinemaCon after it happened, is that's what the conversation was on Twitter following the hashtag CinemaCon 2016 was, you know, where was the Star Trek stuff? That was disappointing, just because it seemed like such a no-brainer that we would get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess they feel, because they've been so quiet with their marketing, I guess maybe they feel like having this event and making a publicity stunt out of the whole thing and inviting the fans will give the entire film a big lift. And it probably will, because it'll be covered by everybody.
I hope it does.
Yeah. I mean, you got to figure that they'll make sure the cast is there. JJ will probably be there. Obviously, Justin Lin will be there to give it a big, you know, lift. Fans will get some autographs and stuff. I mean, it'll definitely bring the awareness level up, I would think.
I hope so. I hope it doesn't end up just being a little event for LA, because people aren't going to be flying in from pretty much anywhere else unless they're super wealthy and can take time off work to do so, because it's so last minute. It's supposed to be next month and we don't even have any details about the event. Is it going to cost money? Is it going to be, you have to be someone special to get a ticket? Where in LA is it going to be? You know,
Is it going to be the convention center? Is it going to be on the Paramount lot? Is it going to be at Bad Robot in Santa Monica?
Right.
I mean, you know, where is this?
If it's at Bad Robot, then not very many people would be able to attend, so... So we have no idea what the nature of this event is going to be. If it's going to be some they say it's a fan event, so I don't think it's like a press gala thing. I think it's, I mean, at least just the term fan event makes it sound like it's for anyone who can get there would be able to come.
Right.
But I don't know. We'll see. I can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's supposed to occur next month, so we should have details fairly soon, I would think.
I would hope so.
But that's cool. I mean, you know, that's something that they did not do in the two prior films. This is a kind of a unique way of, you know, launching a new trailer and launching the entire marketing campaign for the movie. So,
yeah, it's
it could
true.
End up being a lot of fun.
Yeah, it could. I mean, some people have been saying maybe they've been saving up, you know, a big PR push until right before the film comes out, and they think that that's going to be a good strategy. So, I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. See, the thing is, like, and it's not comparable, but like the Star Wars Rogue One trailer dropped this week that we're recording this, and I feel like the press moment for Star Wars is never going to end. I feel like they've got everything planned for these like alternating new trilogy movies and anthology movies that they've got it planned out. You know, every 4 months we're going to have something awesome come out to promote one of these things, and you know, Marvel Studios, they had the Doctor Strange trailer drop this week, and I just feel like everybody else has their act together so much better than Star Trek. It's just disappointing to feel like in the golden age of fandom, the franchise that started fandom is getting left in the space dust.
Yeah, well, it certainly feels that way with respect to the movie. I'm hoping that the TV show will turn things around on that front, but we'll see.
Sure, because then, I mean, the thing that the TV show could do is it could, and I think we've talked about this before, is it could resurrect the kind of week-by-week enthusiasm that people had for Lost, but with the modern, sophisticated internet behind it, which is to say, people doing podcasts, people doing YouTube channels, constant conversation on social media. So it could really blow everything else out of the sky.
It could. Yeah, I mean, something like The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, those have been wildly successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In that way, like you say, you know, with the integration of the internet and everything. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that came out recently that we wanted to talk about that's related to Beyond is this this new photo that Justin Lin released.
Yes.
So on First Contact Day, which was cool, I think we maybe mentioned this in our last podcast, we were hoping that they were going to do something. For First Contact Day. And we got a cool photo of two aliens on the set of Star Trek Beyond. It's not clear whether they play an important role in the film or not, or if they're just random alien extras or what. But it's something.
Yeah, the impression I get is there.
Aren't they supposed to be like two people that are famous that are in disguise?
Yeah.
And you're supposed to guess who they
yeah,
are.
Yes.
Yeah, so
that was the
yeah.
contest. And 2 days later, he revealed it was Danny Pudi, who was on Community as Abed, and Kim Cold, who was on Fast and Furious 6. And I've never seen Fast and Furious 6, but of course I was a big Community fan, and so that was cool to see Danny Pudi there. Of course, they're completely unrecognizable underneath all this makeup.
Right.
Yeah, tons of latex, and yeah, every part of their body is covered with something. Did anyone actually win the contest? Because he said, if you can guess who they are, I'll give you, you know, free signed T-shirts or something.
Yeah, yeah. About a dozen people sent him the right answer.
Nice.
Wow,
one,
really?
Two,
that many
three,
people,
four,
huh?
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 people sent him the right answer.
Well, the wow. hint, the one hint he had given was, here I am hanging with two of my favorite people ever to work with.
Hmm.
So that was, you know, the clue was, and I think he said that they weren't in... You know, he gave other clues to that. Oh, they weren't in this series, or they weren't in that series, or something like that. So,
yeah,
he gave a couple of clues. So, I guess if you knew his work well enough, maybe you could figure it out.
Yeah, so that's cool that he was doing some fan interaction there. People seem to enjoy it. Now, the thing
that is like the only fan interaction we've really gotten.
Yeah. Yeah,
at all, and related to this movie.
Uh-huh. And this is the kind of thing that should be happening like every other week, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like Justin Lin really does care about that.
Yeah, I think he does. He seems like a cool guy. I mean, I guess I need to really watch Fast and Furious 6. But, you know, everything I've seen about him as an individual is seems to be positive. He seems to really be invested in a project that a lot of other people could see as just cashing a paycheck.
Right. Which is what
His
we
Fast
want.
Fast and the Furious films are really good, if you like that kind of thing. They're really well done.
Yeah, I guess the question on people's minds is, can that translate into... Because just Trek has such a different tonality to it than a Fast and the Furious movie. So
yeah, I'm gonna be optimistic and say, you know, a lot of people didn't like the idea of Harve Bennett and Nick Meyer introducing like a more Navy movie militaristic feel to Wrath of Khan. Because it was such a sharp contrast to the pre-existing tone of the franchise, but now it's, you know,
it's an old standard. Yeah.
Right. The gold pressed Latinum standard. Can we say
the gold pressed Latinum standard? Yes.
Okay, then the thing that I wanted to observe is the Danny Pudi, his alien makeup. You know, it's very lizard like, kind of dinosaur like, and then he's got this kind of beard of horns that goes around like a chin strap, like an Abraham Lincoln beard, then that comes up around along his skull, and it looks identical to, or virtually identical to, Jem'Hadar makeup.
Yeah, it really does look like Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And so then the question that I pose to the two of you is will the Dominion play some role as the bad guys of this film, or is it just derivative alien makeup that you can look at cynically as derivative or optimistically as an homage?
I think it's derivative, and I don't mean to be cynical about it. I just think they don't really know that they're being derivative.
I think so, too. I think it's a coincidence more than... Because he's not wearing anything else to indicate that he would be...
Yeah, he doesn't have the Ketracel white.
That's right.
And I don't think they're going to want to go through the trouble... if they're trying to appeal to a mainstream audience, they're not going to want to go through the trouble of trying to explain who the Jem'Hadar are.
Right. Sure. Right.
Yeah. No, no wormholes, no Vortas, no Founders.
Probably not.
I think they just wanted some like cool aliens who kind of looked like dinosaurs. And this is the closest thing. Because, you know, dinosaurs are awesome. And something that I was reminded of yesterday, I was hanging out with some friends. Somebody started talking about Tyrannosaurus Rexes. It derailed the entire conversation. And I'm like, wow, I feel like we're all still 8, and it's just magnificent.
Well, the awesomeness of dinosaurs is just an undisputed scientific fact. So.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. And I also think there's a Voyager episode where they meet, like, dinosaurs once they evolved into humanoids. So
totally.
Maybe there'll be some of that as well.
Totally.
Anyway, there we go.
Yeah, so I guess time will tell. So there's supposed to be a brand new alien race, right? Isn't that what we heard in the initial summary of this movie, that the Enterprise was going to be encountering a new alien race?
I think the term was used was threat. I think it was a new alien threat.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll see lots of new aliens that we've never seen before, just like we got in the first two JJ films. Background-ish type characters or people who have small roles, poking their heads in here and there. I'm sure we'll see a lot of cool makeup effects to like some cool new aliens. We got a lot of that. That's one thing I've really liked about the JJ films, actually, is the really amazing makeup they've done on less major characters.
Yeah, I liked the cyborg guy they just sort of have in the background of the bridge.
Yeah,
Can't find his
the
name.
dude on the bridge who's he's got white makeup.
Yeah, he's cool looking.
Yeah, he's fantastic, and we interviewed him for a Trek movie at one point a couple years ago
Oh, that's right.
at San Diego Comic Con or Phoenix Comic Con? I can't even remember. But yeah, I sat down and
I
chatted with
remember
him.
you doing that. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it was San Diego.
Yeah, I think it was too. I think it was San Diego like 2 years ago. And he is super cool. He's a super cool guy.
The actor's name is Joseph Gatt. The
Yeah, Joe
character's
Gatt.
name
That's right.
is 0718. And I think we need to mention last year at the Vegas Star Trek convention, he was the only presence from New Trek there.
It's true. Yep. And he's super
That is
approachable.
true.
So if you see him in a convention and want to go say hi, he's a super nice guy.
Is he in Beyond? Do we know?
Check.
We don't know for sure, but
I would think so. I mean, if he's considered an Enterprise crew member, they'll probably bring him back, I would
he
think.
was in the comics, the spin-off comics from Into Darkness, so
Okay. Well, that'd be cool.
he's not listed on the IMDb page, so he might not be there.
yeah, I think a
Yeah,
lot of people
well.
aren't though,
But
aren't
he's
listed.
also just an extra, so who knows? Who
Yeah,
knows?
who knows? So we also wanted to talk about this quote from Bob Orsi that we had in the comments section of the website. Because as everyone will know, Bob wrote the original script for what has now become Star Trek Beyond. And he pops in on the website from time to time. We love having him on the comments boards. It's great to see him interacting with people. And he's talked quite a bit on there about, what his role was and how that how his role with this new film ended. And someone was asking him about, the original script because one of the sticking points, I think, for a lot of fans that upset a lot of fans when he was ousted was when it came to pass that the reason Paramount didn't like the script, and this was a quote from Simon Pegg, who said that the reason Paramount didn't like the script was it because it was quote unquote too Star Trekky.
Which did not go over very well, by
Oh
the way.
my goodness.
No, of course not. And to be fair, Simon wrote a fantastically written piece on his blog in response to the backlash
Yeah.
after he said that. So I totally recommend you go and read that. It's on his personal blog, and it's just the man is really well spoken, and I think he knows he's got a good head on his shoulders. And I kind of felt bad for him because I think it was sort of a slip up of him to say that, but at the same time, perhaps it was a Freudian slip. Maybe it was actually the truth coming out. And I think it's very believable for a lot of people, and just based on what Bob and others have said. And so what I'll read you the quote from what Bob said on the website. He says, "We wrote two drafts of a script, but when it and this would have been long before Pegg was brought on to write, or Doug Jung was brought on to write, or Lin was brought on to direct. We wrote two drafts of a script, but when it made it to the top and was rejected, we did a Hail Mary version of a new story in 2 weeks. But I knew it was a lost cause and not what I wanted to do. I was just trying to be a good soldier and not give up, but it became obvious that I needed to walk away or suffer for 2 years. Really, we submitted one story that I believed in." So this sort of supports the idea that he, finally was able to write the Star Trek story that he had wanted to write instead of, because Bob, Orsi and Kurtzman are this dynamic duo of writers who know how to churn out a tentpole summer blockbuster film.
Yep.
They've done it. They did it with Transformers, and they did it with the first two Trek movies. And I feel like Paramount brought him in because they're like, you can write us a summer blockbuster. And I get the impression that for this third film, he finally felt like he had earned his stripes, so to speak, in order to sort of write a version of the story that he wanted to see as a Star Trek fan rather than
Yeah.
as a
Right.
tentpole summer film writer. And Paramount wasn't having any of it.
Right. It was more his vision because the other films, as has been widely celebrated, the films were almost done by committee. Mm. They used to call it the Star Trek Supreme Court, I believe.
The Romulans have an organization called the Continuing Committee, which is like the shadow organization that controls the Empire. So I would like to think of them as that.
I like it.
Right, but it was like this group of guys. It was JJ, it was Damon Lindelof, it was Bob and Alex, and I think Brian Burke. And they would all, you know, bounce different story ideas across. And I think in a bid to make the thing more accessible to a mainstream audience. And I think when Bob got his chance to do his own little movie, he didn't really concern himself so much with what the mainstream audience thinks. I mean, that's total supposition on my part.
No, but it's perfectly reasonable. The other thing is, not only is there the longstanding, decades-old challenge of trying to integrate something that appeals to Star Trek fans and a mainstream American audience, there's a much bigger challenge nowadays for tentpole films of you need to integrate a global audience.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason that one of the reasons that Transformers was so successful is because people in Asia loved it. And so if you can't make something that will be successful in China, then the studio doesn't want to start with you. And in fact, one theory I heard for why, I think this might have been John Cleese who said this, about why the Daniel Craig Bond movies didn't have as much humor as previous versions of the Bond franchise is because it was hard to translate that into something that Chinese would be interested in. And so they just went with more of a straight action movie type of thing. And so we may see that same kind of phenomenon affect Star Trek.
And I think what we're also seeing is more attention paid to the UK and the European audience as well. I mean, particularly the UK, I think. You know, a lot of things are set in London these days. We had London played a big role in Into Darkness. Yep. We had Benedict Cumberbatch and Alice Eve. And now we have Idris Elba.
Who is also British. Beyond.
That's definitely not by accident.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so like you said, I think you're totally right on the money, Jared, when you say that the international audience is such a big part of how movies are made these days.
There's an extra hurdle, though, with Star Trek, because Star Trek is largely identified as a very American phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty beloved in a lot of other places, though. I said it's pretty beloved in a lot of other places, though. In Germany, Germans go crazy for Star Trek.
That is true.
They're like a pocket in Europe.
Yeah.
But up until the last couple of movies, like there has been virtually no international box office for a Star Trek movie, which is why the budgets were always so low. So I think it's Star Trek is still viewed very much as the American colonialism in space.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that perception has changed somewhat, but I think there's still that perception.
You mean because there are things like an episode where Captain Kirk on an alien planet starts impassionedly reciting the U.S. Constitution?
Unless we forget Abraham Lincoln in space.
That's true.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that's actually more ridiculous.
Maybe it was like an illusion, I think, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's a recreation from Kirk's mind, the same way Sorok is a recreation from Spock's.
From Spock's, right.
So, I definitely want to talk about the new Star Trek All Access news that broke today, but I think a good segue to that is to talk about this poll that I mentioned. So, last podcast, Jared, you talked about your poll. Do you want to just give a brief recap on what our findings were from that?
Yes, okay, so I sent out a poll on our Twitter feed to our followers there. What are you more excited for, Star Trek All Access, the new TV show, or Star Trek Beyond, the new movie? And it was basically 75% people were more excited for the TV show, 25% were more excited for the movie. So it was 3-1.
And do you remember how many votes we had?
About 400, a little more than 400.
400, so not many. Yeah.
Not as many as I'd like.
And that not many relative to our follower base, yeah.
It's slightly less than 1% of our follower base. Which
so that's important to note, because we're working with small numbers here. But it's still fun to sort of see what the feeling is like out there. So we thought we would try to extend this a bit, and we put a poll up on our website. If you haven't voted in it, please do. It's just one click. It's on the top of the right hand sidebar on the website. Asking the same question: what are you more excited for, Star Trek Beyond or the new Star Trek television series? We so far have 1,414 votes at the time of recording, and the results are completely different from our Twitter poll. We have 67% of people more excited for Star Trek Beyond, and 33% of people excited for the new Star Trek television series. And it'll be interesting to see if that changes as the news cycle changes. So one thing we thought might be causing this shift is just, you know, the people's votes might be sort of dependent on whatever the biggest news was related to right before they voted. So if there'd been a lot of Beyond news coming out, they're going to be more excited for that. If there's a lot of, you know, television show news coming out, they might be excited for that. So maybe we've got a big piece of news today. Maybe that'll help bump things up. So, of course, the big news that I'm talking about is the rumor, which we're pretty confident at this point that this is true, that the new Star Trek television show will be set after Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and before Star Trek The Next Generation. So Birth Movies Death is reporting that they were able to confirm this. And an important point of that is also that it will not be set in the JJ First timeline, but it will be in the original series, the original Prime,
the
timeline,
Prime timeline
canon.
Now, the other thing that's been mentioned is that it's the first season of an anthology series.
Yes.
Right.
So the first season will be in between Undiscovered Country and Encounter at Farpoint, but the second season could be during the Dominion War, and
yeah,
the third
it could be anyone's
could
guess.
Be 20 years right. after Star Trek Nemesis.
I think that's
right.
a really
you could go anywhere,
cool way
which
to
is
do
really
it.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah, and Jared, right.
that
kind of
keeps
what
all parts of the fan base interested. Like it could be, you know, like you said, one season could be TNG-ish, another one could be original series, another one could be an offshoot of DS9.
Yeah. The other could be about, like, young Sulu, and another could be about, like, what happened in between Where No Man Has Gone Before and the Corbomite Maneuver. Because supposedly, like,
right.
there's a year in between there, right?
Yeah, about a year, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and Jared, I think you'd been the one saying that this is when you thought you would like to see it take place.
Yep.
Yes, so thank you for bringing that up, because I'm a very self-congratulatory person, but I prefer that I don't have to be.
Well, congratulations, sir.
Oh, thank you. Oh, you're
we were
kind.
Witnesses.
Too
we
kind.
Were witnesses. Yeah. You called it.
Yeah, I this is something that I'd always thought was a time period that was ripe for exploration, because the original series movies, I think, are generally seen, and you mentioned it before earlier, as like the gold standard, the high watermark for the franchise, and so I think people like that era, and they would like to see more of that era. The mm-hmm. other thing that I have been kind of concerned about, if you do anything that's like past Nemesis, is we're already at a point in 2016 technologically, which is advanced mm-hmm. much more than a lot of the stuff we've already seen on Star Trek, that if you extrapolate, you know, what Picard and Data had access to versus what we have access to now, I think there's a lot of technological predictions that you just couldn't possibly make. And so if we set it in a period in between, like, what we've already seen in terms of established technological abilities of our crewmates, I think you narrow it in to a place where there are more dramatic possibilities, if that makes sense. I don't know if I was rambling there.
No, I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah,
I definitely
totally.
See what you mean about, yeah, without just totally changing what, you know, what Star Trek is, how do you
sure.
push it
yeah.
far enough into the future? And you, because otherwise you're just ending up introducing all of these wacky technologies that might work if it were its own non-Trek sci-fi show.
Sure.
But
it's
yeah,
fit
so how do, yeah, how do you make that all fit together? Yeah, and make it still Star Trek, but advanced.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, no, I agree.
But I guess if they are going to go into an era that's already pre-established in Star Trek's history and already has a distinct look to it, I guess we're not going to see much in the way of new tech.
No.
I mean, it's going to look very, you know, they're going to wear the maroon uniforms. Mm-hmm. And
which I love.
They'll have hand communicators, you know.
Are there any...
Assuming that that's exactly what they do.
What?
Yeah,
what?
So I mean, what if it's right before TNG?
Oh, like, you know? Oh, like perhaps a young Captain Picard on the bridge of the USS Stargazer, like that kind of thing.
Well, maybe. I mean, it doesn't even have to be Picard. I'm just saying, you know, the time period between Undiscovered Country and Next Generation, like a lot happened
Yeah,
in the
that's.
Star Trek
Oh,
universe.
yeah. I
So
think.
I think there's still some wiggle room in there in terms of the tone and the uniforms and stuff like that.
I think there's about 75 years in between the two.
I think you're right. 75, 78, something like that.
Yeah, because I think the idea was Encounter at Farpoint in the Trek timeline happens 100 years after Where No Man Has Gone Before. I think that was the
Okay.
idea. And so, and then every year that passed in terms of real life happened also in the Star Trek verse. So when Undiscovered Country happens on the 25th anniversary, that's about 25 years after Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Something
Okay.
like that.
Yeah,
Something
that
like
makes sense.
that. Tell us if we're wrong in the comments.
Yes, please.
I'm sure somebody
Somebody
will. That will
will.
not be a
They keep us
problem.
honest.
Yes.
Does
Now,
anyone think
no.
there's gonna be a does anyone think there's gonna be a Kelsey Grammer cameo?
Oh, wouldn't that be sweet?
That would be fun.
Yeah, great idea.
I'm down for a Morgan. What's it, Batson or
Morgan
Bateson?
Pressman? No, that's
No,
Bateman.
Batson, right?
No, the Boozman.
Bateson. No. No, Batson. Batson, I believe, is the name. Morgan Batson, I guess. I don't know. We all know who we're talking about. The
Yeah.
guy from Cause and Effect.
Yeah.
Well, I googled Morgan Batson, and there's a realtor in Columbus, Georgia, by that name.
Bateson. No, Morgan Bateson. And he's the see,
Bateson,
but here's
okay.
the confusing thing is he's the captain
Yeah, it's Bateson.
of the Boozman.
Of the
Bozeman.
Bozeman,
Bozeman.
yeah.
Yeah, I said it wrong.
Bateson of the Bozeman. That is
Yeah,
confusing.
that's confusing. And then I think
In
it was
2278.
It's the Star Trek tongue
And then
twister.
I think I think the whole idea is it's named after Bozeman, Montana, and that's where her first contact happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, now here's the other thing I would like to see happening in that time frame is I would like to see how the Klingons from the original series became the Klingons from TNG. Because the Klingons from the original series and from the movies, they're very reasonable people, and they have them as the analog for the Russians. And one of the things I love about it, which I would cite as an example of like countering people who say it's too American, is part of the goal is to show that the Klingons are just like the Federation, and the as we should believe that the Russians are just like the Americans, and someday we will all be fast friends. Like there's that episode Day of the Dove, where they confront Kang's officers, and they say, "Oh, you're gonna capture us and take us to experimentation camps. We know the horrible things that you do to us." It's like, we don't do that kind of thing to you. You're the guys that do that kind of thing to us. And we're like, "Oh, wait, we've all been listening to the same kind of propaganda against each other." So I thought that was something that they did to show the Klingons are very reasonable, and you know they participate in the diplomatic process and all this kind of stuff. Whereas the Klingons of TNG and then Deep Space Nine, it went even more with this. Like every little thing that happens dishonors someone and his sons and his grandsons. And if it doesn't do that,
Yeah.
then you have to commit suicide or you have to kill the guy who offended you. And it's like there is no way that this kind of like tribal savage mindset is congruent with a civilization that has established an
Like warp
intergalactic empire.
technology.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Who's going to math class if you live in a society where going to math class will get you killed with your math books or whatever? And
Right.
I think you know there's
You forgot
good.
the carrot to carry the one. You have dishonored your children.
Exactly. Yes. We will slay you with your slide rule in the ancient
Yeah.
manner. And now there's a couple things they could do with that. One, they could say, given the humiliation of needing the Federation's charity after the destruction of Praxis, that they kind of retreated it to this more warrior-based mindset. You could do it that way, which I think that would be the interesting thing to do. That's what I'd like to see. Because again, in Day of the Dove, when they're talking about the Klingons' attitude, Spock says they have, quote, maintained a dueling tradition, unquote. That's
No,
it.
Kirk
No, Kirk
says
says
that.
that. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Anyway, but that's the line. They've maintained a dueling tradition. Not the they're space warriors who are like the worst elements of Vikings and the worst elements of samurai mushed together, and they're always killing each other. So they could do that. They could say it's kind of like they have some kind of quasi-spiritual exploration or regression or whatever you want to call it, in result to coping with the shame of Praxis. The other thing they could do that would be easier is just say there's a caste system in the Klingon society, and some people are in the warrior caste, and some people are you know, in the science caste, and some people are like a worker caste.
Yeah, I favor that. I favor that interpretation because, like you said, you've got to, where are your warp engineers? They're there.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be the easiest thing to do. It would also kind of fit with, there's this great episode of Deep Space Nine called "Once More Unto the Breach," where General Martok is giving his backstory, and he basically says he was born to a lesser house, and so the best he could hope for was to be a civilian laborer on a Klingon ship, and then due to some accident where the captain died, and he rose to the occasion. That's how he was able to get a battlefield commission and become a warrior. So that would be the way to do it, I think.
And maybe you could kind of merge the theories and say the destruction of Praxis precipitated some political upheaval in which the warrior caste, as it were, ended up being the ones in power when we return to them later in the Next Generation.
Sure, yeah. That it caused it was a disruptive event.
Right.
So there's a lot, but I think we all agree there's some cool stuff there.
So I have a question for you both. Are we excited that we are going basically back into Star Trek's past for the new show, or would you have preferred something completely new?
No, I think this is fantastic. This is, I mean, this is what I'd wanted to see. Caleb, well, what do you think?
I'm totally excited about this. I guess I don't think that the fact that this is set in the quote-unquote past precludes it from being completely new. Because like Jared pointed out, there's a lot of unexplored territory there. So we can still, right. I mean, wherever you are in the timeline, whether it be all the way into the future, all the way in the past, or in the middle somewhere, you know, you're always having to fit into the canon, the larger canon. So, so long as this doesn't end up being, a poor attempt to sort of connect, if their only goal is to connect Undiscovered Country to Encounter at Farpoint, I mean, maybe, you know, that could be, I say, a byproduct of setting the show in that era. But if that's their only goal of it, I think I'd be less enthusiastic. But just the idea of it being set in this timeline, I don't think means it's not new. And it doesn't mean we're just rehashing something.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think? What's your answer to your own question?
I'm a little skeptical that there isn't going to be a lot of fan service involved in this. And for one simple reason, in order for this whole thing to fly, they've got to make us go gaga over this idea and to get us to spend the money every month to do it. So I tend to think that we're going to see a lot of things we have already seen in order to lure people in. That's just the cynical part of me thinking that. Let me
feed a little bit of your cynicism. I think one of the reasons that this was the decision was to entice Nick Meyer to be one of the producers, because
could very well be.
Star Trek VI was his baby. He had no involvement with the franchise since then. This is a way for them to say, oh, hey, do you want to continue telling the story that you've already started telling and continue your legacy in two of the best movies from the franchise, which are the two he directed?
Yeah, good call. Good call. I wonder. You may be right on, man.
I think that's a big part.
Could be. No, I'm still excited about it. I'm very excited about it. And by the way, Kayla, I'm beginning to wonder that since this may be taking place, you know, obviously maybe 30, 40 maybe years after the Undiscovered Country, maybe Nichelle really is in it. Maybe that answer she gave at the convention.
Oh, that could be. Because she said she's been approached, but she's not going to talk about it. So,
yeah, so maybe Uhura is going
to
be in it.
And that's another really good reason to put it in this time frame, is you can still get some of the old favorites, or you could do young versions of the TNG characters. So you can have those. You can have a young Captain Picard, young Jean-Luc Picard, but you don't have to cast Patrick Stewart in it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the problem with that, though, because I mean, the good thing about having an older Uhura is that you can cast Nichelle Nichols in that.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Right. So, and you can cast George to play Sulu.
Yeah.
I mean, because Sulu, doesn't Sulu end up being head of Starfleet at one point? later in his career.
Oh,
that may be. If that's true, I didn't know that.
I seem to recall them saying that in the Voyager flashback episode.
Oh, good question.
I could be wrong, though. I could be wrong. I could be misremembering. But, I mean, if that's the case, that means Sulu's still got, you know, a bit of a career ahead of him after he leaves the Excelsior. Yeah. So maybe we'll see an Admiral Sulu or something.
Also, he's still relatively, I mean, George is still a relatively spry man for his age. Which, for example, Walter Koenig isn't, right? And so that would be a good reason to try to get him involved.
Yeah.
And I think he would love to do it.
George? Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah,
anyway, that was total speculation.
Have we ever had an incarnation of Trek where we didn't have an Admiral so-and-so from the previous series?
Good point.
I mean, every time.
Even Dr. McCoy became an Admiral at one point.
Sure he did.
Which is, I don't know that he ever would have become an Admiral. That seems weird.
I think
it was probably an honorary Admiral. You know, he's like 130 years old in TNG. I think it's just a cool, fun little thing to honor the old guy.
Yeah,
you know?
yeah, like an honorary doctorate from a university type of thing.
That, by the way, just as a total aside, that scene he does with Data at the end when he says, "You treat her like her lady, and she'll always bring you home." That chokes me up every time.
Yeah,
that's like one of the great Star Trek moments. It's probably the best thing in that pilot.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think the bookend to that scene is in All Good Things, where Picard finally comes to the card game.
That's another one.
I would really like to do an episode one day about All Good Things and why it's the best way any series has ever been ended.
Yeah, to the point where it's so good that I feel like it kind of makes the TNG franchise obsolete, like before it even started.
What?
What do you mean?
Just because I think it's better than any of the TNG movies.
Oh, the rest of the film.
Okay, I thought you meant the previous episodes. You meant.
No. Oh, sorry. I meant the movies that were to come. Like, it was just really weird to have this great send-off, and we talked about this before.
Right,
this
because it's wrapped up.
And then say, they're still in the Enterprise, everything's still the same.
Oh, they're back.
It's just the lighting is a lot lower now.
Yeah, they turned the lights
down. No, I have to agree. All Good Things is better than any of the features. And of the TNG features, including First Contact.
I love First Contact.
So do I.
Though.
So do I.
So good.
So do I. But All Good Things has an emotional resonance to it that
that maybe can only be captured in a television setting because it had the entire seven seasons previous to go on.
Yeah.
So they could use elements from all of those things in a film. You can't do that because you can't assume your audience has seen the past 7 years of TV.
Right. Right. Well, that's the thing. Yes, absolutely.
The other thing that impresses me so much about All Good Things, and we've gone completely off the rails, is they take Encounter at Farpoint as the corresponding bookend, which is not a beloved installment of the series, and they kind of justify its existence, right, by bringing back Q dressed up as like the Queen of Hearts in his weird post-apocalyptic.
He's totally Queen of Hearts. Wait, is he supposed to be the Queen of Hearts?
I think it's supposed to be reminiscent of the Queen of Hearts from Alice.
I never even thought of that.
Well, because like the Queen of Hearts is very, you know, silly. She's very brutal and she's very capricious, right? And I think that's what we're supposed to get.
He's totally wearing a Queen of Hearts costume.
Yeah.
I never even thought of that.
Oh, I'm glad.
Neither did I, actually.
I feel delighted that I could drop that on the two of you.
Yeah,
I just thought it was some weird Q outfit.
Me too, because he's just a weird guy.
Yeah. Ooh, speaking of Q, I wonder if Delancey will come back now.
Oh, he's the one they could always do anything with, no matter the time.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Point where I think if Enterprise had gone one more season, they would have brought John Delancey back for an episode.
Hmm. Yeah,
and they can always have him cameo as a different character.
That's true, because he's so much. Cause, I mean, he looks so different now. And the other thing they can always do is put makeup on somebody.
Yeah, although it would be kind of hard to rationalize how Q could age so visibly.
if he wanted to, he could be like, "I want to look more distinguished."
Exactly. Well,
I suppose. Yeah, you could make up anything.
Well, the line I think of is in Tapestry, where Picard says, "So I'm a 21-year-old, am I? Well, I certainly don't look like one." And Q just says, "To everyone else, you do." So they could do the same thing, like, wow, you're supposed to be immortal. How did you get so old? Well, to everyone else, I look normal.
Yeah. Hang a lantern on it.
Hang that lantern.
Well, assuming that, you know, this is definitely the way they're going to go with the anthology and everything, and they've actually made that decision, I'm guessing we're going to start hearing some casting soon. They're going to have to start building sets.
Oh, yeah.
Like, stuff's going to start happening soon, guys.
They're going to be filming in a few months.
Didn't they put out a picture of people on a green screen?
No, that turned out to be fake. Yeah, so it was this one picture that some guy had posted on his Facebook. Yeah, he'd posted on his Facebook that, oh, I'm working on this set today. He was some cameraman or something. He said, oh, yeah, it's for the new Star Trek. It's a promo shot. We're just doing a camera test for some promo shot for the new Star Trek thing. And it turned out it totally wasn't anything related to that.
Yeah, CBS. Didn't CBS actually come out themselves and say, like, yeah, no, that's not what that was?
I don't know if they released a statement, but you know, my sources and the sources that all the other news outlets had told them, no, this is not really related to the show.
Yeah.
So.
I thought it was a bit early for something like that, but you know, I thought
it could be reasonable because, like this guy had said, oh, it's like a promo shot. So I thought, oh, they're just gonna take some pictures of, because it was a guy dressed in an astronaut suit walking around on something like Mars or something. I'm like, oh, they're just gonna show a guy and be like, into the future, Star Trek, you know? And I was like, all right, they could do that. Just like a little, you know, 10-second thing. I thought that is possible, but I guess
no, totally.
Yeah, so Vreenak had to come out on that one and proclaim it fake. Had to dust off the old Vreenak gif.
Yeah, we haven't had to do that in a while.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a while.
That happened. Used to happen a lot, actually.
It did.
That was like a nice 2004.
Yeah, Vreenak used to be a regular installment on a Trek movie.
Yeah,
but I think There's going to be a lot of rumors flying around now, guys.
Yeah, we're going to have to be careful and see what's real and what's not.
Got to be diligent. Yeah. Got to be diligent.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted for it, though. I think this aspect of the fandom is something we've never been able to do with an ongoing series. So it'll be fun to see how it happens week by week.
Yeah, this is the first Star Trek television series that's in the age of the age of the internet.
Yeah.
The true modern age of the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Where we're doing things like what we're doing now and getting out podcasts every couple of weeks. So we'll, you know, be able to talk about stuff right away. It's going to be fun to watch.
It's a very exciting time to be a Star Trek fan right now.
Yeah.
Indeed. So Jared started a little tradition here on the Shuttle Pod where we like to close out the show, if we can, with what he has coined the Trek anecdote, which is a little anecdote from your daily life, how Trek has invaded your daily life. And this came up as we were talking about the picture that came out of the two aliens that Justin Lin posted recently, and specifically about that guy who looks like the Jem'Hadar. So the three of us have been chatting about it, and the thing that the Trek anecdote for me is related to the Jem'Hadar in general. So I've always thought that, and I will post a picture of this on the article that posts with this podcast. I've always thought that the Jem'Hadar look exactly like the character Thwomp from Super Mario Brothers. And for those of you that don't remember who he is, he's like that big block. He's like a big block of stone with spikes all around, and he's just got a face. Like a big square block with a face with spikes all around his head. And he will slam down into the ground, and you have to run underneath him and not get squished.
Yeah.
And I swear, every time I see a Jem'Hadar, I just see Thwomp's face.
Because they've got that beard of spikes.
They've got the spikes all the way around their head, yeah.
Yeah.
And like a gray face, scaly face.
You know, when you first said Super Mario, I thought you were going to say Bowser. Because, you know, he's like a turtle dinosaur thing. But no, you're right. It's Thwomp is what's more appropriate.
It's Thwomp. The Thwomp's face. I'll post a picture up of what I mean so you guys can see.
All right.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it. That is it for the 16th episode of the Shuttle Pod Podcast. As usual, it's been great. Looking forward to bringing you the best Star Trek news on TrekMovie.com and talking to you guys next time. We have to figure out what we're going to chat about next time, but I'm hoping that one of these times soon we're going to do this this All Good Things podcast. I think that could be fun.
Yeah, I think it would be good, since we did Generations, to do All Good Things and then Insurrection and First Contact and Nemesis.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, that's all of us from the Shuttle Pod signing out, and we'll see you guys next time.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Guy walks into the doctor's office. The doctor tells him you need an operation. The guy says, I want a second opinion. The doctor says, okay, you're ugly too, but boom, boom.